Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, midday show with Andy and Randy with you here. Tuesday, late morning, 20 minutes away from an NFL no huddle. Get back into everything that happened in week two, the National Football League, and make sure you are caught up on both of the Monday Night Football games last night. I know we talked a little about the Bucks win over the Texans. The Chargers also beat the Raiders late night. How late did you stay up for that one?
Oh, I stayed up till the beginning of the fourth.
Good for you. Yeah. Good for you. I made the first quarter, and I was like, I don't know.
I can't do this. I got that nap. I was saying about yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I knocked some of that tide off. I got like 35 minutes.
Good. So we'll get into that. We'll get into some college football coming up at 12:20 as well. Mike Conti joins us at this time on Tuesdays every single week to talk about all kinds of different topics, Falcons, college football. Hawks made some news last night, which we'll get to in just a minute.
A little surprising, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
Weird timing. How are you, Mike?
Good. How are you?
Good. Let's just start with big picture. Really nice win for the Falcons on Sunday night against Minnesota. Two games in, what would you sort of hang your hat on confidence-wise? Like, what do you feel most sure of with this team?
Yeah, most sure of that they're going to be able to, and I know the Tampa game was a little bit of a struggle, but I think game state might have affected it. I think they're going to be able to run the ball pretty effectively on just about anyone. As they proved on Sunday night. They're not going to have six sacks every game like they had Sunday night. They're not going to have four takeaways like they had Sunday night. But I think with Robinson, you know that you're going to have a pretty honest chance of being able to run the ball on pretty much everyone. And I thought the offensive line did a much, much better job run blocking on Sunday compared to the Tampa game, although some of that might be matchup dependent. But if the defense plays at the level that they played at this past Sunday night consistently, Falcons are going to be a very, very hard team to beat this year.
Have you ever seen – I'm not going to say because me and Andy have been here. Is that the best they've ever played in your – since you've seen them play?
Okay. Yeah, I looked it up.
I was like, I've never seen them play that good before.
I looked it up. Less than 200 yards allowed with 6-plus sacks and 4-plus takeaways. The last time the Falcons did that was 2002.
Oh.
The last time any NFL team did that was week 15 of the 2023 season.
Damn.
So, yeah, I mean, statistically, absolutely. The 2002 game, the last time they did that, they beat the Panthers 41-0.
Right.
And I actually had some people tweet at me saying they were at that game, and it could have been like 90-0 if the Falcons wanted to really pour it on that day. It was that kind of day. So, very, very dominant performance on Sunday.
Well, and that, you know, that's sort of the, if you watched it, that's how it felt. Right, I mean, that's what they were doing to Minnesota's offense. They couldn't do anything against them. They were getting J.J. McCarthy on the ground, which, by the way, it seems like they banged him up, too, so he's probably not even going to play this week. And then they were taking the ball away. And the final score is pretty big margin, but it certainly felt like it could have been bigger had they turned some of those red zone chances into touchdowns. So flip side, obviously the thing you're most confident in 2 weeks in, what's the thing you want to see get cleaned up?
Got red zone, obviously. I mean, you've got to finish drives with touchdowns and not field goals. And that was the problem in week one as well. That's really been, I think, a consistent problem for the Atlanta Falcons over the last decade is just they look like the 99 Rams between the 20s. And then they just, something happens in that red zone. And I think a lot of people are assigning way too much blame to the offensive coordinator and the scheme and the play calling for that. I think it maybe there's a little teeny bit of predictability that does come into what the Falcons do in the red zone, but you need your receivers to get open and you need your offensive line to execute. One thing that I think is very, very encouraging and has exceeded my expectations, Penix, while he didn't have a big statistical night on Sunday, because he didn't have to, they were able to run the ball effectively, but Penix is making very high-level throws. Considering that was only his fifth career start, I still believe that maybe Penix is a little bit further ahead of where I projected him to be at this point. So I am very, very encouraged that they have a quarterback who can make plays in the red zone. And he made plays in the red zone at the end of the Tampa game. It was a struggle, but he made plays. I do feel like this red zone thing is going to correct itself at some point.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned yesterday, you know, it was a couple of them. The one route where Kyle was coming open on the corner route, like you stick with it for a long time. If you can find a way to get that ball to Mooney, going rolling to his left, things like that. So I think it's just really, I'm with you on the, it's just
little things.
Little things are away from it. The kicking situation. And I know we had the, you know, 5 for 5 and all those different things. They called it good. That's all that matters. But more or less, Mike, the kicking game, the coverage and everything. And we mentioned that last week on the show. How big was that to allow them to be able to, first of all, put them in bad field position?
Well, that is where they improved the most week over week, I thought, was kick coverage. You know, and the cliche is teams improve the most between their first and second game. The Falcons improved in a lot of different phases week one to week two. But the kick coverage unit, Marquise Williams, he did a heck of a job this past week getting that fixed. Because Randy's right. You know, Minnesota was starting with poor field position most of the night. The kick coverage team even generated a takeaway late in the game. Like, you cannot ask for anything more from the kick coverage team. I think part of it, too, though, if you look at kickoffs, being able to not kick the ball out of bounds is
big.
Central to the kick coverage team being better.
It's such a tricky little thing now, because like you don't want to kick it long, because then it's at the 35.
Yeah.
Don't want to kick it short, because if you kick it too short, it's not in the landing zone.
That's
obviously,
right.
You can't kick it out of bounds, because then they get it at the 40. So it's like it's almost like a chip shot in golf. You got to aim for the right distance and then hope they take it out.
Yeah, and as far as the field goals are concerned, like, I'm happy Romo went 5 for 5. He very nearly missed 2. So I don't – and two short ones, the long ones.
So we ain't out of the woods, what you're saying.
I don't think we're out of the woods. I don't. I hope I'm wrong. And, you know, I'm sure over more time I'll probably feel a little bit better about this. But I thought it was informative that Raheem Morris said there was a 90% chance that he's going to kick this Sunday.
Yeah.
Huh? Well, you're not going back to coup. So what's the 10% that we're all kind of stuck on right now? I'm stuck on it because I do think he missed the first one. You got a good call there. He very nearly missed the second one. He did make the final three. And I guess we're really being nitpicky here. But
plus,
I say
game,
that
ain't no nitpicky.
I mean,
well,
kinda.
Look, I mean,
he probably missed the first one. I think that's okay to say.
I know Lily had stuff Sunday afternoon, so I don't know how many of the early games you got to see. Mm-hmm. Watching NFL all day on Sunday and seeing kickers routinely drill 50 plus, and in the Cowboys' case, 60 plus field goals, and making it look routine. Yeah. That's what I want to see. I want to see a 35-yard field goal look routine. And maybe Romo will get there. You know, I'm rooting for him.
Right.
Local guy. I mean, he's ours now, so we got to root for him. But I don't think we're totally out of the woods yet. I just thought it was really interesting that that Raheem did leave the door open for him to not be the kicker on Sunday. I don't know why he did that.
I do wonder what that 10% chance is. It's obviously not Younghoe Koo. I wouldn't.
No, it can't be. No.
Mike Conte joins us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. You said we were talking before the segment just about this upcoming game against the Panthers. Called it a little tricky. What makes you feel that way about this one?
Like you said, the Falcons never play well against Carolina, ever. They beat them a lot, but they never play well at field, especially up there. You know, they've won a lot of games up in Charlotte, but they haven't played awesome, like a complete four quarters, all three phases up in Charlotte. And a lot of those games, for whatever odd reason, tend to be low scoring. Mm. And I think what we saw Sunday night is, even though the Falcons' defense was dominating that game, the game played out in a way where Minnesota was one play away from taking the lead most of the night. And, you know, one bust, one big play for Bryce, and you can find yourself in trouble. The other thing that scares me is Bryce has tended to elevate a little bit against the Falcons. And we were talking about the game that he played in Arizona. He finished that game strongly. So it's a tricky game. I think a lot of fans have automatically just chalked this up as a W, and I'm not sure it is. Now, it is funny how things play out in the NFL, because I think we were maybe carrying low expectations into the Washington game. Well, now they have a quarterback injury.
Yes.
And it's interesting, if you look at the Falcons over the next month, two of the quarterbacks they were supposed to see are injured. Washington and Brock Purdy.
Yep.
Brock Purdy's injured. So things work out in very unpredictable ways.
It's the NFL, man.
Could see Marcus Mariota at some point this year.
Could very well.
Please stop. But,
that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it's great. Des Ritter almost beat us with the last throw, too.
Well, true.
Mike, this weekend, two big games. I mean, obviously, we were happy. All the local universities, everybody won their game.
Yeah.
But the big two, obviously, Georgia going up to Tennessee, and the big win for Georgia Tech.
Huge win for Georgia Tech. I think their biggest from a national standpoint, it maybe since 1990, because they've had a lot of big wins. Yeah. Like, I want to be very clear about that. But none of them have really put them in the national picture. Georgia Tech is absolutely right in the national picture now. They will be favored in every one of their remaining games until they play Georgia. Okay? Abe and I were talking about it. Now, there's a phrase called Clemsoning, you know, and Clemson grew out of that. But Clemson used to have that one, like, Wake Forest game or NC State game or Duke game that they would trick.
Yeah.
and they weren't supposed to. And I just hope Georgia Tech can stay out of that trap, because they're going to be favored in every one of the remaining games other than Georgia. As far as what the Dogs did up in Tennessee, really good win for them. I think the game was playing out in a way where if Tennessee makes that field goal at the gun, it does nothing to harm Georgia as far as their playoff hopes go, but now this really bolsters them. I think we might need to have a slight reevaluation on how we rank the teams within the SEC right now, because I think LSU got a lot of credit for a close win at Clemson.
True.
Clemson now has shown through three games, including the game they played against Troy, that they are not very good. Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe we need to just calm down on LSU, just especially like they solid win against Florida. I'm not going to, ding them too much because of what their margin of victory was. But Texas A&M and Auburn are starting to enter this conversation now, especially Texas A&M. I mean, if you are evaluating everyone in the SEC and quality of victory to this point, I think you've got to put Texas A&M's win at Notre Dame right up there. And I understand Notre Dame's 0-2, but it's a really, really close 0-2. You know, they were competitive against Miami and, really had a good chance to beat Texas A&M. My whole point is the SEC just it looks even more like a gauntlet than usual, and that's saying a lot. And we haven't even gotten to Oklahoma yet.
Right? Yes.
So it's going to be a long, tough year
coming up. That's what we were saying is, like, obviously so many teams have really nice wins early. Georgia Saturday over Tennessee, A&M over Notre Dame, yep. LSU over Florida, and also over Clemson. But then you look at their next five games, and it's like, oh, my God.
Well,
good luck. If you go 3-2 in those games, that's incredible.
Look at Florida's next five.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's saying fire Billy Napier. Well, give the guy who's going to fill in for him a little bit of a chance. Like, Florida's got a really good chance of being 1-7 or 8, and I don't think they're nearly that bad. It's just the way that the schedule's playing out for them.
Why did the Hawks trade Kobe Bufkin last night?
Weird, right?
Pretty weird timing for an NBA trade.
Caught me really off guard. Because what have we been talking about really for the last 2 years? The Hawks, I don't think they've figured out backup point guard yet, and that's a really important position. And it felt like prior to his injury that the Hawks had a lot of eggs in the Kobe Bufkin basket, being the primary backup to Trey Young. So they traded him, and on top of it, it doesn't feel like they got really anything substantial for him. I think they got cash, right? Not even a draft pick?
Yeah, cash.
I don't know. Unless there's something I'm missing or just not understanding, that feels like maybe the Hawks could have done a little bit better. However, he is coming off basically a season-long injury, and maybe they have analyzed this enough to know that Kobe's future in Atlanta just really is not very bright. This means you're going to probably see a lot of Veet Krejci at point guard this year for the Hawks.
Oh, okay.
So
there's your answer right there. It was there's my answer.
Which I love.
Because I don't think it'll be. You do?
No.
Oh, okay. So, what? No, hold on. What?
Yeah. I mean, he's all right.
He's fine.
but also, like,
I don't think I'm you're playing. I don't think you're playing Kennard at point guard. Right.
I'm also not going to sit here and I know you're not doing this either. And talk about like Kobe Bufkin being traded being the thing that derails.
No.
Because first of all, no one really knows. He's played a little and he's been okay, but like he's not like you know.
I'm just surprised.
Me too. Yeah, totally.
I just was not expecting that. They're going to open training camp, I think, 2 weeks from today.
Right. That's what's so odd about it.
Yeah. You don't see too many teams making trades on September 15th.
No, you don't.
So, but if this gives Kobe a chance.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
To play, then it's a good thing for the player. And you got to keep that in mind, too.
Mike, thank you.
Appreciate you, Mike.
Right, appreciate it, as always. We'll come back. We'll get to an NFL no huddle to kick off the noon hour. First hour of the show, as always, brought to you by Bobby Jones Golf Course Atlanta. Golf open to everyone. Visit BobbyJonesGC.com. We'll be right back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.